quiet moment in New Orleans has very little white noise if you are on the streets of the French Quarter. Traffic layered on Dixieland, layered on dancing, street life, and the boisterous sounds of restaurants, clubs, and bars. New Orleans is a city of sound. Or is it a din of noise? When does the jazz band cease to be music and become an oppressive force assaulting city dwellers? Sorting noise from music, streetscape soundtrack from din, is an old argument. And with technology, we can try and win that argument all on our own. Noise can be canceled with fancy new headphones. But what are they canceling? And is the canceling of noise also the erasing of culture? Megan Garber, a staff writer at The Atlantic, has some thoughts on technology, noise, and noise canceling in a city where not even Hurricane Katrina canceled Mardi Gras. Her story is called Sonic Boom: How Digital Technology is Transforming Our Relationship with Sound.
Noise is just so pervasive in our lives, and it's something I think that we want to control. Humans, I think, throughout history have tried to control noise in certain ways. You can look at music. In some ways, that's an attempt to control noise. But, you know, we've tried to sort of construct towns in ways that would allow us to control the noises of bells and how far bells could reach and things like that. And so it's, I think, in some ways, human history has been kind of a story of human attempts to sort of either amplify or cancel out certain noises.
You're describing something that's very, very familiar. But, you know, the assumption in a noise-canceling device is that somehow we know the difference between what is noise and what is sound. And we actually don't, do we?
That's true. We don't. And it's actually very subjective. So, you know, one person's music is another person's noise. And it really does vary. There are cultural variations. There are age variations. So, it's actually a very sort of politically fraught question. What is noise versus what is sound? And what, do we want to regulate and try to control? And what do we just sort of accept as, just an aspect of modern life?
It's a really deep cultural question down in New Orleans where you set your story in The Atlantic. And it really reminded me of when I used to do television. We shot a story about Anne Rice, the writer who lives in New Orleans. And we would do these live shots on the street trying to get, you know, a little video vignette shot on the street. And it was so difficult in New Orleans because there was always just some honk or a trumpet or, any kind of sound could disrupt what we were trying to do. And you brought all of that back in this story.
Every city is going to have its particular noises and soundscape. But New Orleans, because it so identifies with its music, it's just really a noisy place and a sound-filled place. And these two things, the noise and the sound, are sort of in constant dialogue and occasionally competition with each other.
Does technology liberate people from noise, or does it create walls between people in a place like New Orleans?
I mean, I think both are true. Certainly in New Orleans, they've attempted to regulate noise, and I think it's been a very difficult thing for them to do just because there are so many sort of politically and culturally fraught questions that surround it. But I think on a broader scale, technology is a way that we use to create noise. So it certainly, allows us to sort of create noise in that way. But also it is something that we've been experimenting with when it comes to limiting noise and to sort of, protecting ourselves against the onslaught of sort of aural weapons and things like that, where we can just say, I'm going to put on my noise-canceling headphones and I'm not going to hear the trumpeting on the street that I don't particularly want to hear right now, or I'm not going to hear the person who's yelling on the subway this morning. I'm just going to listen to my own music, and that will be that.
There's this, imprecise but, again, very familiar notion of peace and tranquility that in the law goes back to the 1800s. And I'm wondering if what you're finding is that these acoustic technology companies have sort of gravitated to this idea of peace and tranquility and are trying to manufacture it in the form of a product.
I think that's absolutely right in some ways. And I think they do it with a lot of respect to how subjective that idea of peace and tranquility can be in the first place. But there are certainly companies right now that are sort of taking advantage of digital technologies and digital affordances to try to create personal soundscapes, basically, and to help architects engineer rooms that will be sort of ideally calibrated for certain noises. So there's a lot of thinking right now going into how do we sort of calibrate our shared public spaces to create noises that will be sort of best for everyone, basically, and that will make everyone happy and not annoyed.
How is the story of trying to, get more peace and tranquility in New Orleans the story of seeking out what are called sea-weighted sounds?
So basically, there are many different types of sounds that the human ear can hear. And C-weighted sounds are the ones that are the low sounds that can kind of, it's like subwoofer sounds that kind of hum at this very low level. And those can be particularly annoying to people. So basically, audio engineers and acousticians are trying to pay a lot of attention to the subtle nuances of different noises so that they can sort of say, okay, well, a high-pitched noise is going to be very frustrating to people. So let's really try to regulate the high pitch noises, and let's really try to regulate the lower pitch noises, and try to actually pay attention to those subtleties in the noise. So it's not just a matter of decibels and loudness, but it's actually a matter of psychologically what really gets on people's nerves. And it really does, I think, illustrate, you know, those different types of noises that exist. There's the oomps of the clubs, and then there's the different noises of the street musicians, and then the honkings of horns on the street, and the, you know, talking of people on the street, and all of that. So they're trying to find ways to sort of let all of that coexist in a way that will be, in this subjective way, peaceful to the nearby residents of New Orleans.
As a journalist, how many times have you said, and could you repeat that, the oomph oomph of the clubs?
Yes, and I should have said oomph oomph is actually how it goes. Yep.
Yeah, well, let's definitely be precise. Part of the story that you tell here is how these acousticians and these city councils that are trying to control sound and noise need to get a sort of baseline map of what their city, their place sounds like. And there are these things called soundscapes that are associated with particular places. As a journalist, how historically important of an artifact do you think something like a soundscape is?
You know, I think it's very important, actually. One of the things that interested me about learning more about this story was just the idea that we tend to think so visually when it comes to history. We tend to sort of approach, you know, our knowledge of the world as it once was in this very sort of visual way that's been really, you know, sort of guided almost by both images and texts. And I love the idea that, you know, recent technologies have allowed us to think much more strategically and archivally about the sounds of the world. And so for me, I love the idea that we now have, you know, recordings of New York City in the 1920s and the 1930s. And there are academics who are doing work in this area to really gather those recordings together and archive them. And I love to, you know how the world sounded back then, how New York sounded back then, and to actually hear that, I think, just, yeah, journalistically and just, you know, as a person, I find it so interesting to have that extra dimension of historical knowledge.
Megan Garber's a staff writer at The Atlantic. She wrote about sound in her piece for The Atlantic called Sonic Boom, How Digital Technology is Transforming Our Relationship with Sound.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.